Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the second season of A Man on the Inside, which is a Netflix show. This one also, like the first season, ran for 8 episodes. It works out to 4 and a half-ish hours of content. And again, this is part mystery, part comedy. And this season, the lead character of Charles goes undercover in a university.
College. It's a subtle difference. But the reason I pointed out is universities tend to be infinitely larger. A college.
They have multiple colleges within them, whereas a college in and of itself, as a freestanding one, is a smaller thing. That's fair. That's fair. And that's relevant here. Because this is a small college that's trying to get a major donation, which is going to destroy the school if they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what leads to the PIs getting pulled in and him going undercover as a engineering professor. And I really felt that that shift in setting changed the show quite a bit.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, but it had a very different vibe.
Yes.
Because you had teachers and students, just like you had the residents and the employees at the rest home. We saw quite a few of the people from the first season as guests.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated more than I had expected to. I figured we'd get Calbert and... Really, I expected him to be mentioned more than seen, necessarily.
He was really well used this season.
Terrifically used. Had his own little arc and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw Sally Struthers' character. We saw Elliot. We mm-hmm. saw Dee Dee. I'm trying to think if we saw any other recognizable faces.
Grant?
Grant, yes. He was rather funny to see. And it kept that whole place in play. We even went back to the location.
Mm-hmm. Several times.
Yeah. So I appreciated that. We added, again, the new cast of suspects and characters at the college. And it made sense for Charles to be the man on the inside there.
Mm-hmm.
Just as it made sense for him to be on the inside at the retirement home. It does beg the question of, if this goes for a third season, what's a new setting that makes sense there? And removing it from the retirement home, which was the right choice. It would have been redundant if he'd just gone to a different one and
mm-hmm.
such. Although you could have had some fun of the residents of the first think he's cheating on them by going to the second.
Yes.
Or if he goes to the second thinking there's no problem and they wind up merging or something.
Yeah.
But doing it in a college setting, I think, really changed it up quite a bit. And it youthened the show. It made it feel younger.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of the people, a couple of the characters were older characters on the verge of retirement.
They changed the generational comedy.
Yes.
I think one of my favorite, I'm going to call it sequences, was when effectively three generations go after the same piece of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So first Charles, then Emily, then Jace.
Yes. And Jace's solution I thought was brilliant.
Yes.
And showed a side of Jace that we knew had to be there, but just hadn't seen.
Yes.
So that mm-hmm. was fun. There were a lot of things where they played into the college campus experience. This season runs for most of the semester,
mm-hmm.
whereas the first ran for like a month.
Yeah.
So having the Thanksgiving break, stuff like that, the one thing they never did was Parents Week.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
And I think that could have been a lot of fun. If that had been the one where his daughter and grandchild show up. Because
mm-hmm.
the expectation would be that it would be the grandson was there. Oh, you brought your grandfather. No, the grandfather's there and the grandson's visiting.
Yeah.
So there could have been some humor there.
Well, we really only got to know two students.
The one who had all the jobs.
Claire.
And her roommate.
Yeah.
And there came a point where their story ceased and they were just dropped.
Yep.
The fact they weren't touched on in the finale was a little disappointing.
I would agree.
Because it would have been nice if Charles had set her up as getting a job in the main building,
mm-hmm.
helping the provost or something like that. to where she didn't need to be working 1,001 jobs or something. Yeah. And I think that would have made a lot of sense because, if I recall correctly, the provost had been working there since she got out of college,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even while she was in. So having this be kind of the next generation of the implication being 30, 40 years hence, this would be the provost.
Yeah.
Would have been a nice touch. The show had a good vibe to it. The mystery was good. The characters were a lot of fun. There were one or two places in, I think it was the second or third episode, where I'm like, you can speed this part up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Mainly dealing with the PI and kind of getting that arc going. And it wasn't bad. It just felt long.
Well, they seemed to make a conscious decision of, last season we dealt with Charles's family dysfunction. So this season, we're going to find out the PI's family situation.
Mm-hmm. And it begs the question, if they go for a third, what fills that void?
Mm-hmm.
Which family structure needs to get dived into or something? And that may depend what the setting is.
Yeah.
But finding a setting where the premise works is tough. Particularly once you've rule out, okay, we've done the retirement home, we've done the college. Where else do you need 75-year-old-ish guy?
Yeah.
With an engineering background. Not that that was particularly relevant first season.
Agreed. I mean, because we were talking about what are basically the closed communities that you need to get into. And in that respect, the college worked.
What if it was the library system?
Mm-hmm.
You've got, presumably, retirees there, people who are trying to find time, something to do with their time.
Yep.
It would be an excuse to bring the English professor back in.
Yep.
Possibly he's even the one that brings the case to them or something. So there's some potential. And the one who played the English professor, I had seen in Alphas.
Mm, yeah.
And when I saw him, it's like, he's got a unique enough voice that it's like, I know the voice. I recognize the actor. I just can't place him. A part of it was his hair. I mean, he's aged a little. He's balded just a little.
Mm-hmm.
The hair's thinned out, I should say. And Alphas was, what, 20 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
So there was that. And I knew he was kind of the authority figure, the mentor advisor kind of type. But once I went through IMDb, it's like, yeah, now I get it. It was like with Susan Rattan, first season.
Uh-huh, from L.A. Law.
Know the face, recognize the actress. What do I know her from?
Yep.
And the minute you had told me it was L.A. Law, it's like, oh, yeah, she played the secretary. I think it was for Corbin Bernstein's character.
Yeah.
You know, once you get that right memory jog, mm-hmm. suddenly it all floods back.
This season, they had Gary Cole.
Yes.
They had Constance Murray, who was one of the leads on Switched at Birth. Linda Park, who was one of the leads on Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah.
Michaela Conlon, who was one of the leads on Bones. Max Greenfield, you were saying, had been on Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
So again, impressive casting. And that doesn't even go into Mary Steenburgen.
Oh, yes. She played the music professor who's essentially starts dating Charles.
Yes.
Over the course of the season. Of course, she's married to Ted Danson.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had recently watched a YouTube video. It's a quote-unquote podcast. And I got to put air quotes around that because if you're doing it on video and it's on YouTube and there is no RSS feed, it's not a podcast.
Yeah.
It was a really good interview they did with Dick Van Dyke. And they went to his house to go do that.
Nice.
And in prepping for it, they had just watched, I think it was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Mm.
That morning. Kind of, we're going to talk with him. Let's go, And I'm sure they'd done other prep work. But it was a lot of fun because as a couple have been doing this podcast, they clearly are talking with people that they are either friends with, fans of, or mm-hmm. both in this case. And when they were talking about how Dick Van Dyke had played Ted Danson's father on Becker.
Oh, I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
So had Dick Van Dyke. Yeah. He was reminded. Now, the guy's like 100 years old.
Yeah.
But they had a great conversation. It was clear Ted Danson had read the books of Dick Van Dyke. I've read some of them, where he's talking about his history, how he'd met Stan Laurel and stuff like that.
Mm.
And Ted Danson's at that age where, again, at 75, he's not young.
Mm-hmm.
But again, 25 years younger
yeah.
than Dick Van Dyke and stuff. And I've got to imagine that all of that really colors his portrayal of Charles here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what his goal is with the show other than to you know, act and have fun. But I've got to imagine there's a part of, because the underlying message of both seasons ended on a note of, you can shrivel up and die, even if you still live, as a retiree.
Yeah.
If you don't get out there, stay active, interact with people, do what you love.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that sequence at the end of the first season, where we see Charles going out and having dinner with friends, doing things, sending a clipping to his buddy from the retirement home now versus his daughter, things of that sort, where he's building a new life. And then at the end of this, we wind up with the English professor getting into essentially a forced retirement.
Yeah.
And he goes and visits him afterwards, and it's like, well, so what are you doing? He's like, well, I wake up, I read my books, go for a walk, I go to sleep, rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
And Charles sends him to the retirement home with a note to give to Dee Dee of, here's another professor, he needs your help.
Yeah, please take care of him.
And she understands the intent of the message.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, we need to revamp our library. Can you help out with that? Cut to sometime later, they're in the library, and there's the book club. They're talking about the book and just how he's interacting with his new social circle.
Yeah.
And Charles is there, too, we find out. And it was a nice moment.
It really was. It was an excellent ending for the season.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that. I don't say spark of hope or whatever, but there is a life is what you make of it sort of a thing.
Yeah.
For that matter, an actor I'd like to see in a future season is Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, there are a number of kind of elder statesman actors out there that this kind of a show is just a gold mine for in both directions, for them and for the show. And there are not enough meaty roles for actors of certain ages. And I don't just mean once you get past that retirement age or whatever, but also there are periods in actors' careers where they're between child actor and adult actor.
Yeah.
They're between the parent-grandparent slots.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's hard to find good roles for them or to transition from child to parent to grandparent roles.
If you talk to the Hallmark actresses, they'll tell you there's even that period between the you should be dating and romantic lead versus happily married and raising kids.
Yep, yep.
So there's an age that isn't written for there.
Yeah. So I like how this is targeting, again, that older group of both characters, actors, and fans.
Yes.
But I think this season, moving it into that college thing, getting kind of that lower level engaged as a core chunk of it, versus they were just the employees at the rest home first season, essentially.
Yeah.
Or Charles's daughter and son-in-law.
This had an underwriting theme of what is college there to teach and give you.
The Gold Rush episode, I thought, was really good on that.
Yeah.
And kind of fun.
Yeah.
And I've got to wonder how much of that came down to, we need one of the suspects or one of the people involved to get literally caked with mud.
Yes.
Okay, they're going to do this outside in a public thing. How would we not be able to recognize them? Well, they've got to somehow mask their face. Oh, well, they'll have a bandana on. Well, why would they have a bandana? Well, everybody would have a bandana, given this lore of the college about the gold rush and all of this. And what seemed like just, oh, wouldn't it be funny if at the beginning, played into it. And also when Charles goes to the English professor, help me out. I don't understand how to answer the riddle. I keep getting all this gold glitter thrown in my face all day or all week. And he's like, well, go have Mona, the music professor, take you down the path or whatever it was.
He also has a great line about, with all the budget cuts, have you realized that those of us who are tenured professors and who've dedicated careers to this college don't really like those of you who just come for a few months and don't take the time to get to know the institution we love?
Which is funny because you could also read that of those of us who are the regulars on a TV show don't always appreciate those of you who guest star for a little bit and don't understand the show.
Yes, yes.
I'm not saying that was the subtext, but it was a reading of it. But then when we get the stuff with Ted Anson and his wife as they're playing this newly met couple, and she's long-term at the college, giving him, here's the backstory, the lore, here's how the guy went gold mining, here's how he did this and all that stuff. And it was just, it was a really fun episode that furthered the story of the plot, certainly forward their relationship, but also gave us the lore of the college.
Yes.
It made us care about it as an entity.
Mm-hmm.
That without that, the whole, well, what happens to the college just kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So there was some really well thought out aspects of the season in terms of making us continue to care about not just the characters involved, but the mystery and the stakes of it.
Yes.
And there were a few things that were just more on the wacky side of things.
Gary Cole's wife?
Gary Cole's wife, the selfie gallery.
Yeah.
That aspect. The heist, if you will, where they're trying to get his phone.
Oh, that was funny.
And how that goes wrong, but there's consequences of it going wrong that play into various relationships and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they've gotten the phone, they've got to clone it, they've got to get it back, how they handle the getting it back.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Brilliant. And I'm like, why couldn't they just have done that to begin with?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can only do that once. And Mona's code name at that point was priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. They did some fun stuff.
Now, as I recall, the story of Stanford out in California is that a family lost their son tragically, and they went to various universities, Ivy League schools on the East Coast, and basically said, how much would it cost to donate a building, this, that, and the other? They weren't very impressed with the meetings they had. Didn't feel they were treated all that well, because, you know, they were country bumpkins from California, and this was back, what, 100 years or more ago.
Yeah, and there was more of a cultural divide between the coasts at that point.
Yeah, and when they heard the price, one of the family members said, we could start our own college for that.
So they did.
They did, and they named the college for their son.
Yeah.
And there were times while we were watching this when I wondered if this was kind of someone's take on a Stanford, a place that was born of one family's idea of a school built on idealism, if you will.
Well, and it, I was going to say touched on, but it really hammered home the difference between liberal arts and,
oh yes,
what is perceived to be more tangible, more lucrative fields of study.
And there is a school somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, I don't know which one, and a bunch of, I'll say, corporate billionaires. I don't know who they are exactly, but the Bill Gates type people who heard that this place was having financial problems, and they approached it and they said, okay, we will each give X million dollars if you prioritize these very vocational programs, and we will offer internships. We will offer,
we'll support it in other ways.
Previous too. Generation of equipment for them to learn on, this, that, and the other. And they got the school back on its feet. And kids are coming out with very useful degrees that then feed these businesses, future employees. So there was also an aspect as I watched this of how much of this is kind of a ripped from the headlines with a cautionary tale of make sure you know what you're getting into.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more this season with Jace, Charles's eldest grandson, starting to get towards the looking at college point. If there'd been more of a subplot of why do I have to go to college?
Yes.
And then a little bit more with his daughter and son-in-law who met at this particular college, either telling him or just otherwise talking about their college years as they're thinking back on it, and getting the different perspectives from a prospective student. We've had one or two characters that were current students.
Mm-hmm.
We've got former students. We've got various professors and stuff of the different ways you can look at the college experience.
If Jace had started from a perspective of what do I even need a college education for? And over the course of the season, Charles had been casually picking stuff up from various departments, and he had been picking up something from the music department about scoring video games, had been picking up something from the art department about creating art for video games, a computer science department about coding video games. Because how many times have we seen these kids playing Worm whatever with the football and just casually going back to the put it in the envelope, and now he's mailing it to Jace of, you could learn to draw the video game, you could learn to score the video game, you could learn to make the video games you're addicted to.
And they could have set that up early in the season of Emily asking Charles of, you need to weigh in on this, get him thinking about it. It's like, I'm biding my time.
Yep.
And if it had just been like, it seems like he's just picking up a brochure at each, you know, department or whatever, as he's getting to know the people or whatever, or just as he's idly talking to them or whatever. And it just seems like it's a piece of acting business almost.
Yep. Yep.
And then at the end, he sits down with Jace and it's basically, here's a map of campus. He's like, yeah, I just want to play video games. And he's like, let me show you all the departments. And okay, journalism, you know, video games get reviewed. They've got to be marketed.
Yep.
You've got the art, you've got the music, you've got everything from the engineering on up and down.
Yeah.
And
kinesiology, where they do the motion capture.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and even just knowing how bodies move.
Yep.
So the history of video games, just history in general, coloring video games.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of ways I think they could have snuck that in that would have been fun. And what I like about Michael Schur is he's an intelligent guy who seems to hire intelligent, informed writers and works with them and stuff. Because, again, I go back to The Good Place was just a course on ethics as told in sitcom format. Yeah. And there's not that, I don't say heavy-handed, there's not that focus on a particular discipline or topic here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're certainly not getting lectures on engineering from Charles, but we are getting kind of those life lessons of, just because somebody's old doesn't mean they're useless. And yeah.
I think one of the best life lessons was in the Thanksgiving episode when Charles told Mona, I invited you to participate in our Thanksgiving, and you came and turned it into what you wanted it to be.
Yeah. I had certain people I wanted to spend some time with, and you shanghaied the evening.
Yeah.
And you got your drama, but that wasn't the goal of the exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very interesting moment and well done. There were a couple of moments like that that not only serviced the story, but just as individual moments.
Mm-hmm.
If you got enough of the setup and stuff, like at the end of the Gold Rush road path they were going on, and they get to kind of that water sculpture.
Yeah. That was nice.
And it's a, what do you see when you look at it kind of moment. And I'm like, that clearly had to be part of the lore of that actual school they filmed at.
Yeah.
Now, whether it was the Gold Rush stuff or not, or whatnot, but the physical thing that made the moment work, I thought was great. And I'm curious where they filmed it.
Yeah, me too.
I like how there's that material to get out of it other than just, oh, here's some good laughs, or yep, here's whodunit.
Mm-hmm.
But to, I don't say learn something, but have at least that opportunity.
Yes.
Because there's that depth of the material and stuff. And I think this season certainly went into family dynamics quite a bit. And just relationships in general. And just assuming things about people.
Mm-hmm. We definitely explored further what happened with Charles when his wife passed away.
Yes.
And dealing with that for him and Emily. I think the pecan pie was very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
The should we make it, should we not make it, will it make people sad?
Yeah.
That was very painfully relatable.
Well, and some of that was holdovers from kind of the last season and just the backstory of, again, the memory care unit and all of that.
Yeah.
But how it's not just you deal with it the once and it's over and done.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of goes back to, I'm pretty sure it was first season, when they were driving. And it's like, we're not having the relationship we want to have.
Yep.
And then he goes to put his earbuds in because he thought, oh, I thought we solved it.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know.
Well, and he nailed that scene because it was very much like what one of the grandsons would have done.
Yes, yes. I hadn't put that together, but yeah. Yeah, Ted Danson is a very skilled comedic actor. He's also a good dramatic actor. Yeah. He's able to pull off the, I've cracked the case, the, I've just totally botched this and regret what I just said sort of scenes.
Yeah.
tell the joke that works, the one that falls flat, and can very much seem to be kind of there in the moment. And just, again, the scenes with him playing off his wife, some of that was great.
At the school reunion, he and Calbert, when he thinks Calbert has just made the greatest distraction ever.
Yes, yes.
I mean, some of that is just gold.
Yeah. And they had set that up with the Thanksgiving scene.
Yeah.
So they're not just winging it as they write it. I really think they've gone through, okay, here's the outline of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Let's write the season. Now let's review the season.
And Calbert had a great scene, ever so brief, but great, with Emily at Thanksgiving. When he sees her in the hallway and basically asks her why she's hiding and what's wrong. And she talks about the pecan pie. And he tells her a bakery Charles took him to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is your father approved kind of a deal.
Yeah.
The situation is they're getting ready for Thanksgiving. She's been debating all week, do I make mom's pie, do I not? Because this would have been really maybe the first, possibly second Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Since. And, well, it would be the second because they skipped a year between seasons.
And she knows dad's got a girlfriend coming to Thanksgiving.
Exactly. Do I want him to be reminded too much of mom? Will that put the romance on the rocks? All of this. They go, here's Monday, here's Tuesday, here's Wednesday. Yeah. With her and her husband. And there's one or two where he's just doing the dishes in the background and almost, I don't need to participate. She's going to do what she's going to do.
I really thought he should have been wearing earbuds for that scene and turned around at the end like, oh, she came in? She put down groceries? I missed it. Darn.
Yeah. There are a number of things they could have done there. But then when they get there for Thanksgiving and Charles is just excited to have the pie, she had decided not to do it. And she's like, oh, yeah, not a problem, Dad. And she turns to her husband as soon as Charles kind of gets out of earshot with, find me a pie. He's like, he's already on his phone working on it.
Yes.
Those two play very well off each other.
They do. Yeah.
And I could see if we get a third season, his family somehow getting pulled in on this.
Yeah.
And that could be a lot of fun because imagine if the close society is kind of, I don't say the Chinatown, Japantown, but the enclosed ethnic community, which Charles is not the least bit appropriate for.
And yet, because he's an in-law,
he's got an inside.
Interesting.
Could really play up almost the fish out of water thing.
Mm-hmm.
The non-retired guy, well, he's retired, but you know what I mean. In the retirement home, you've got the retired professor at the college.
Yep. Well, and going with the Chinatown one, they could really play up Ted Danson's height.
Yes. Eugene Cordero, I don't know what ethnicity he is, but I am certain they could find some really talented people that could kind of fill out that kind of community.
Yeah.
And it could be a lot of fun. It would be one where they would almost have to and ought to do chunks of it with subtitles.
Yes.
And plenty of fun could ensue there. But I think it would also provide some interesting stuff for Charles to get some insights into his son-in-law that he hasn't had. And they seem to get along fine.
They do. Yeah.
But I think there's opportunity to explore there. And I think San Francisco is big enough metropolis that having those kinds of pocket communities and stuff absolutely exist could make for some interesting stories.
Yeah.
And shy of that, I'm really at a loss as to where a third season could and should be set.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because part of the magic really is the closed community.
The closed community and him literally being able to be a man on the inside.
Yeah. I mean, a gated community sounds like a closed community, but anyone can move in.
Yeah.
An over 55 gated community.
Is that really that different than the retirement home first season? I mean, I was thinking, oh, put him on a cruise ship because there's a lot of older people there. But Julie, the PI, would have to kind of go with him on that. So, and you're out of San Francisco now. So it cuts off certain story aspects. The kids and stuff like that.
And it certainly changes the time frame. Well, unless you get multiple cabins because you have the shorter time frame.
He gets hired there for on the ship and it's San Francisco and back cruises.
Mm.
It could work, but it would be harder.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed this season how they pulled a number of faces from first season back in.
Yeah.
And I could see where they've got a few from this season that they ought to bring back.
Mm-hmm.
Julie's mom.
Yes.
The English professor. I could see a few other reasons to be going back to the college.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly baked that in.
Well, especially now that Emily...
Emily works there, yeah.
Mona talking Emily into quitting her job was priceless.
I would expect Mona to come back next season, even if it's a fly-in, fly-out, you know, whirlwind kind of... Because if you do that around, like, the third or fourth episode, Charles has had enough time, depending on how much time elapsed, to feel like he's over her or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She comes in for an episode or two, stirs the pot tremendously, and then he spends the rest, well, I thought I was over her, am I not?
Yeah.
So I see a lot of potential there. And that's, again, part of the fun of the show is it's got a serial narrative. Every episode has its payoff. Every season builds on the previous one. Granted, there's two to look at. But it's got a lot of potential baked into the premise, even if there are some guide rails as to, okay, if he's the man on the inside, if you did either the library one or possibly the cruise ship one, but the library I think it would work perfect at, you could effectively bring in almost another generation of you've got the toddlers. He's doing the readings for them and stuff like that.
What if you did a high school? Because now you've got multiple men on the inside.
Well, particularly if it's his...
grandsons.
I was going to say his son-in-law teaches. He's a public school teacher.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, what if his grandsons brought the case to them from their high school? And they want Grandpa to come as a man on the inside and help them solve it.
The problem with that is Julie's in San Francisco. The family is
in Sacramento.
Sacramento. Flip side, they could wind up moving since Emily's working at the college.
Yeah.
There's logistics. They can work it. They had a year gap story-wise between seasons.
I think they had to because the boys grew up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the boys are great.
They are. They play well off each other. The younger ones, I don't think, get the screen time, and Jace didn't get a ton either, but they're not the stars of the show.
Yeah, but they are fantastic.
Yeah. Again, it's well cast. It's well written. I think the first season was better, but I still enjoyed this one quite a bit.
Yeah, the first season was stronger. But I think the first season, having had that documentary to really inspire them.
Yes, they had, I think, not only solid source material, but an emotional center for the show that... this season, I don't say lacked, but it was the same one from the first. It didn't have one unique to this.
We emotionally bonded to Mona, similar to how we emotionally bonded to Calbert.
Yeah.
Okay, Professor Benjamin Cole was the Elliot.
Yep, absolutely. The provost was Dee Dee. There's definitely situational parallels on some stuff.
But we had Andrea Yee, I think, was the economy professor. Mookie was the art professor. I don't even know the name of the philosophy professor or the, what was it, semiotics?
Oh, those two were just bit players.
Yeah.
They were there in like two episodes and only for a scene or two each. They were the red herrings.
Yeah. Semiotics and linguistics. But my point is philosophy, semiotics, linguistics, no bond whatsoever for us as an audience with them. Art. I mean, she did good with what she had, but she had so little material.
Yeah, she was there as a suspect, not as a character.
Yeah, and because of that, though, we didn't bond with her at all, so she never felt like a viable suspect, because we didn't care about her.
Fair enough. But to me, that's the level of character that was the same as the lady whose necklace was stolen to instigate the first season.
Agreed.
You gotta have some people in some roles.
But we didn't have an equivalent to Grant. We didn't have an equivalent to Susan. We didn't have people that we cared about enough to learn their names. I had to look at a cast list to tell you the economy professor's name.
The economy professor and the journalism professor and the art professor were a level higher than the semiotics and linguistics ones. That were, we get them named at the beginning, we see them a time or two later, but the rest of the time it's as if they're not there.
Yeah.
In other words, they could have been cut from the story entirely and it would not have mattered. But when you get to the art, the journalism and economics professors, they're kind of the lead red herrings. And they exist enough to be viable for that. But yeah, we don't particularly get attached to them or get to know them all that well. Because there are a few episodes where they only exist in service of the plot and the story.
Yeah. That.
Whereas some of the other people, like again, Mona, we see her all the time, even out of the context of the mystery. And balancing the characters for that sort of thing is tough, particularly in a mystery with a whodunit, because you've got to have enough suspects that it's not just, well, it's got to be this guy, because who else could it be?
Yeah.
But not so many where it's like, okay, we've got the entire football team we've got to get to know and clear because one of them did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be problematic.
Yeah.
So they did a good enough job building a sense of community within the college, but because of the nature of the college versus the retirement home, where they're kind of there in a locked room, if you will.
Yeah, the 24/7 aspect.
The 24/7 aspect, but the physically confined community. That, I think, was a philosophical and difference that impacted the season.
Oh, but you did come up with the other kind of confined community that Charles having to infiltrate would be priceless.
Prison?
Yes. Or even the county lockup.
That would be tough to do, and I think it could be a dark season, but if it's essentially a prison for the elderly.
Yeah.
That could work, but I don't know that I would go there. I still favor put him in a library system.
Yeah.
Just because I think him getting to know the different branches where maybe there'd been theft or something like that,
mm-hmm.
he would fit in as just a retiree helping out. He's going to read to the kids or whatever. And I think potentially within a library system, there could be a community of people that are, you know, we're looking for the book. I'll go to whichever location or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's potential there. But again, I'm curious what they come up with for the setting for the next season, if there is one. And I certainly hope there is.
Cause I do too.
It's a fun show.
Yeah. I really hope there's another season.
And again, with, 4.5 hours of content?
It's an easy, fun watch.
Yeah. You can just kind of go through it. Not even say power through it. It's easy to just, hey, it's another 20, 30 minutes. Let's just do another episode. Rinse, repeat.
Yeah. And that final scene, which was after a few credits, was just a great way to end.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo, and thanks again for listening.